Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Look around you for a minute, would you? Pretty much everything you see, seriously, everything, was either made from or got to where it is thanks to crude oil. So today, a special broadcast, The Crude Economy, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you here on this Thursday, everybody. It is the 18th of December. And you know what? It occurred to us the other day that we only really cover oil when it's at its highs or at its lows or moving rapidly either way. And we decided that just wasn't right, that what we needed to do was take a whole program and turn it over to the crude economy, to the idea that oil and its price are built into just about everything that happens in this economy. So today, the show in three parts with a detour for Cuba News about halfway through. Part one, the gallon and the barrel and you. Part two, crude's economic ripple effect. Part three, the future. We are going to start in a city that was built on oil, still is in a way, a city that if you didn't already know it, you would never imagine still pumps 27 million barrels of oil a year out of the ground. You can't ask for a better metaphor for the way that crude oil is all around us, and you can't even tell. And the crazy part of this whole thing is that I didn't even have to leave Los Angeles to cover the story.
I'm Char Miller, director of the Environmental Analysis Program at Pomona College and the W.M. Keck Professor of Environmental Analysis. We are at the site of the first oil well drilled in Los Angeles in 1892.
Okay, but wait, it's the Echo Park swimming pool.
And we're like,
I don't know, a half mile from downtown?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Immediately after it was struck here, this whole hillside was punctured with oil wells, and the rush was on.
What was that rush like?
Well, I think for the city of Los Angeles, it was the thing that made it. We think of movies, we think of music, we think of gorgeous weather, fabulous beaches. None of that is as important as oil. Oil really made L.A.
Okay, then what happened? Because now when you think of L.A., It's all Hollywood and gorgeous beaches and great weather.
Right, and all of those things were true then, and they're still true. I think the oil industry has really faded in Los Angeles in terms of its presence. You look down old photographs of Huntington and Seal Beach, you look down Santa Monica beaches until the 50s, and they were littered with oil derricks. It was the symbol of the city, and that's all disappeared.
What happened?
It's still going on. I mean, we've got 3,000 pumps still working, pumping out hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil every year. We just don't see it. And we've created a landscape that makes oil invisible.
Intentionally?
Intentionally. We have an incredible oil pipeline system under Los Angeles, arguably the best, most dense network of oil pipes anywhere. And that's so we don't see it.
It kind of strikes me that L.A. is the perfect metaphor for this idea we have in this show, or that we're going to have as it rolls out, that oil is in every aspect of our lives. I mean, it's here in L.A. all over the place. We just don't see it.
Right. We don't see it, but we also don't see it on the clothes we wear. We don't see it in the food that we eat. We don't see it in the air that we breathe, though in L.A. often you do.
Yeah.
It's so integral to all parts of our life. The culture of the United States is driven by oil. The built landscape is created because of petroleum. And so Los Angeles, at once in its sprawl and its density, is a perfect reflection of the petro economy.
One of the key prices in that petro economy today was $54 and change. That was crude at the close in New York this afternoon, down more than 3% from yesterday. We consume plus or minus 19 billion barrels of oil a day in this country, but riddle me this. What exactly is in that barrel, both physically, but also economically? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is on that one.
So I imagine a 55-gallon crude oil drum rolling down a ramp into a massive refinery, which isn't exactly right, says Eric Smith at Tulane University's Energy Institute.
First of all, the barrel that we use is simply a convenient measure. It's a 42-gallon barrel.
How come it's 42 gallons?
Because that's what John D. Rockefeller put it in. He put it in old beer barrels back in the 1890s.
And it's a convenient measure because, of course, today oil doesn't move in metal barrels. To get from the fields in Saudi Arabia or North Dakota to the refineries, it goes by pipeline, ship, and rail. But transportation is only a fraction of the barrel's cost. Most of it comes from finding, drilling, and pumping the oil out of the ground, says economist Rayola Duer at the American Petroleum Institute.
First, finding the oil itself can be a very involved process, and it can take onshore maybe $19, $20 a barrel, but it could be three times as much offshore.
Let's look at the domestic oil that's churning out of the Bakken fields in North Dakota. Remember, crude prices have fallen by half since summer. After subtracting the costs of exploration, production, and transportation, most producers can still make a small profit today at around $55 a barrel, explains Smith.
You probably go down to $30 before somebody actually shuts in a well. They might not drill a new one, but they wouldn't stop producing the old one until the price got below that cost.
Of course, what matters to consumers isn't how much refiners pay drillers, but what you and I pay at the pump. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And I'm Amy Scott, filling up in Baltimore.
Okay, $2.64 a gallon.
That's about 70 cents lower than the average price in this city a year ago. So where is all that extra change going?
Clearly Christmas. So it's a little bit extra for the stocking stuffers.
That's Bruce Smallwood, a marketing consultant. I find Margot Malter unlocking her gas cap with a key.
So why is it locked?
So people don't steal your gas, which is never going to happen.
Turns out her mom put the lock in years ago when gas cost $4 a gallon. Malter, a preschool teacher, has other plans for her money.
Not Christmas presents. Save it for traveling, probably. I'll be taking that money to Japan or something.
Cab driver Waylon Hawks guesses he's pocketing $1,000 more a month.
So what are you doing with the extra money?
I'm saving it. Because I'm not going to stay this way.
That suspicion is one reason Bankrate.com analyst Greg McBride isn't expecting a big rush of consumer spending.
Consumers are very quick to scale back discretionary spending when gas prices rise, but very slow to ramp up spending when they fall.
McBride says just 1 in 6 people plan to spend more on holiday gifts this year. With household incomes barely keeping up with inflation, he says a lot of people are just getting by.
Until people see an increase in the paycheck, I think there's going to be this natural hesitancy on the part of consumers.
Still, if more people are paying their bills on time and whittling down their debt, that's good for the economy. Tyrese Davis, a grad student, is feeling flush enough to spend about $100 more per person on Christmas gifts this year.
I think it's just due to the economy, period. I don't think it's necessarily just the gas. I just think the economy is in a good shape right now.
Even Margot Malter, who said Japan would get her money, gave some of her savings back to the gas station. With her change from filling up, she bought a scratch-off lottery ticket. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The lottery that is the American equity markets was all about winning today. It's a tad early, I know, but I am just going to go ahead and say it. I think the Santa Claus rally has started, y'all. We'll have the details when we do the numbers.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
There Will Be Blood, one of the real good oil movies out there, 2007, Daniel Day-Lewis, of course. All right, Chapter 2, crude's economic ripple effect. There are some obvious ones, both as prices rise, consumers being squeezed, for instance, and also as prices fall. Big companies like BP cutting thousands of jobs a couple of weeks ago. Also, I suppose, consumers being squeezed eventually. But it is the less obvious ripples we are interested in today, the ones that hit the economy in ways we don't think much about. Because, as I said when we started, oil is used in the production or transportation of pretty much everything. We called up Kurt Mowry in Rosh Sharon, Texas, just south of Houston. He farms rice and corn and soybeans there. Mr. Mowry, it's good to have you with us.
You bet.
Do me a favor, tell me a little bit about how oil is reflected in the grain business. I mean, you guys do all kinds of stuff, soybeans, rice, the whole smash.
Oil is very important to us, particularly on the fluctuating price. I mean, not just the fuel costs alone for running the equipment, but also for the chemical costs on some of the crop protectants that we put out on those particular crops. They're all derived from petrochemical products in the process, so everything on that end of it, plus the, all the containers, the transportation, the getting grain, not from just the field, but to the processor and them. Everything's tied to oil that we do in our business.
I imagine you use, just for transportation purposes around the farm, you use diesel, right?
Correct. Diesel is our main component.
Are you seeing diesel prices go down as gas prices go down too? Is that saving you any money?
That has gone down probably over $1 a gallon for this year alone, and that's a substantial savings. Unfortunately, for right this year, we're not going to be seeing any of that savings because we've already got the crop out of the field and it's been harvested. So we're hoping we'll see some of that come about next year.
What about consumers on the end of your product? I mean, if grain prices are down and if fuel prices are down, does anything translate into savings at the store for the consumer?
It will, but as in everything, just like in fuel, the price will go down a lot slower than the price goes up. I mean, it will always. That's always just the way it is because they don't want to be caught on the wrong side. And plus, they've bought higher price inventory and they can't sell it profitably when the price goes down.
Give me a sense, all in, right? When you take oil in all its forms, whether it's fertilizer, protectant, chemicals, gas, diesel, you name it, what percentage of your cost circles around oil?
Oh, gosh. Conservatively speaking, I would say probably about 50%, 75%, somewhere in that range. And it might be higher than that. I mean, when you stop and start figuring everything that we touch and do around here, I mean, it's tied to oil and gas. So it's a huge part of our cost of business here.
Kurt Mowry is a grain farmer down in Rocheron, Texas, a little bit south of Houston. Mr. Mowry, thanks very much for your time, sir.
You betcha. Thank you.
The tractors that Mr. Mowry uses on the farm, or the trucks that take his grains to market, or the cars that you and I use to get to work, roll on tires that are essentially oil formed into a circle. So putting crude quite literally where rubber meets the road, might falling oil prices mean cheaper tires? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer went to a tire store in Northern Virginia to find out.
This is a busy time of year for the Goodyear Tire Store and Garage in McLean, Virginia. People want to tune up before heading out for the holidays, maybe a set of tires.
Yeah, come on in.
Manager Eddie Adia takes me around the tire showroom.
This is our assurance brand.
Adia has been selling tires for almost 30 years. So I ask him, did tire prices normally go down along with oil prices?
I don't remember them going down when the prices went down, but I remember them going up a little bit.
Goodyear owns Adia's store and sets the prices. So I called the Goodyear spokesman, Keith Price, and asked him, will tires get cheaper?
I'm not able to comment or speculate on what might happen to the price of tires.
Price says it takes a while for the tire to go from factory to warehouse to distributor to store. He figures tires being made now with the cheaper oil should be in stores this spring. So will they be cheaper then?
I mean, it's not entirely black and white.
That's Nicholas Mitchell, a research analyst at North Coast Research, who follows Goodyear. He says oil makes up about a quarter of the cost of synthetic tires, the kind most consumers buy. He says competition will push down tire prices.
Someone will move first and try to lower prices to drive market share.
But here's why it's not black and white. With gas prices down, we're driving more, wearing out our tires faster. If demand for tires rises, Mitchell says, prices won't fall as much. In McLean, Virginia, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
We are, as you know, pumping a whole lot of oil in this country right now, the most in decades. The Bakken oil field up in North Dakota gets most of the press when we start talking about our domestic energy production. But down in South Texas, there's a whole nother boom going on. The Eagle Ford Shale is what that one's called. Adrian DeLeon is the mayor of Carrizo Springs, Texas, and he is right in the thick of trying to manage the economic ripple effects of oil and natural gas in his own local economy. In a town that has, just for some context here, gone from about 6,000 people to more than 40,000 people in just the past 5 years. Mr. Mayor, it's good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure, and thank you guys for having me on.
Well, so listen, what we want to talk about is what happens when oil comes to town. I mean, 5-6 years ago, before the whole Eagle Ford Shale thing, Carrizo Springs was a tiny little town, right?
Yes, sir. I mean, there's a lot of good and a lot of bad, you know, but when we're talking about the Eagle Ford Shale, you know, we're talking about job creations, and it's a good thing. It's a blessing for us.
Let me run through a couple of things that you, as the mayor, are going to have to deal with, right? I mean, you've got heavy trucks coming to town, so you've got infrastructure things you have to deal with. You've got job opportunities, I imagine. You probably have to hire more police, all those things. Run through those
yes,
things.
Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, finding employees was the biggest task. Of course, you know, we're such a small town. We're relying on our workforces. We have people here from Kansas. We have people here from North Dakota. We have people here from Pittsburgh, people here from Florida. San Antonio, Laredo, the bigger cities are coming down to work. There's around 60,000 jobs here for people that really who really want to work. You know, there's a job for them.
What does it look like now in Carrizo Springs? I mean, are there wells all over the place and trucks everywhere and barracks yeah. and man camps and all that?
Man camps all over the place. The Eagle Ford Shell itself is in our backyard, so it's really in Dimmitt County. But we are the hub, the home of the Eagle Ford Shell here in Carrizo Springs. And we're just grateful, you know, to see so many people who were basically losing their houses and losing their cars to now, you know, paying off their cars and paying off their houses. And, you know, we have big plans, big goals. You know, we did create a police department. We didn't have a city police department.
Wow.
It's part of the investments and the there's billions of dollars invested in here in the Eagle Ford Shell, and we got to do our part and make sure that their investment is protected and safe.
But when your brand new chief of police comes to you in your weekly meetings or your daily meetings and says, "Hey, Mr. Mayor, I had three robberies down at the grocery store, and there was an assault, and we got trucks coming through," it's a little bit of a headache. It has to be.
Oh yeah, yeah. The traffic is outrageous. You know, the fatality rate is really high. You know, I think last year with those 39 deaths, this year already it's at 50. So that's part of the, I guess you could say, the downfall about this. Of course, you know, the money coming in from our oil and gas is supposed to be used for, you know, infrastructure and new highways and interstates.
What's the biggest change been since this boom started in Carrizo Springs?
Man, business is popping up left and right. We have developers. We have developers from L.A. You know, we have people. we have people from all over New York.
Yeah.
We're just glad that we're doing our part, I guess you could say, for the entire state of Texas. You know, it's a Christmas gift today. You know, are the gases going down? We feel we're a big part of that.
Adrian De Leon is the mayor of Carrizo Springs, Texas. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for your time, sir.
Yes, sir. And you guys have a great day, brother.
It's running out. When you finally wake up, they will have sucked you dry. And you will have squandered the greatest natural resource in history.
Syriana was the movie right there. Matt Damon, 2005, about, obviously, oil. Coming up.
We're going to need oil for the foreseeable future. So it's a steady gold rush, I guess you could say.
Could you really? I don't know. But first, let's do the numbers. There you go. Who's afraid of falling oil prices when Santa Claus is in town, huh? The Dow Industrial soared 421 points, 2.4%, closed at 17,778. The NASDAQ added 104 points, 2.25%, 4,748. The S&P 500 jumped 48 points, 2.4%, closed at 2,061. Yesterday's, yeah, we're going to take it slow message from Fed Chair Janet Yellen was the gift that keeps on giving. Morgan Stanley advanced 3.75%. Today, Citigroup up 3%. Sony's move to shelve The Interview was the stock equivalent of a big box office. Sony shares picked up more than 3.5% today. Theater operator AMC Entertainment pocketed 2%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note thus rose 2.20%. You are listening to Marketplace. Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years. And believe me when I tell you that could not have happened without support from listeners like you. So please, make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift in any amount counts twice. That's thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at Marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. And thank you so much for your support. Also, this is Kai Rizdahl, in case you didn't know who this was.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. President Obama is scheduled to leave for Hawaii for a holiday vacation. On December 19, 1958, Earth received a Christmas greeting from space. An orbiting satellite transmitted a recorded message from President Eisenhower, the first radio voice broadcast from space. And the workplace classic, 9 to 5, opened in theaters 34 years ago. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. A detour for just a moment from our oil reporting to a story about the economic future. What potential Cuba might eventually hold? Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has that story.
President Obama's historic announcement from a business perspective amounts to...
not much. Let's not overdo this in terms of current business opportunities.
Gary Hoffbauer is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute. We might be getting embassies in Cuba, but the embargo is still very much in place. And even if it's lifted, a business boom isn't guaranteed.
This depends on very dramatic liberalization within Cuba. It's not what the U.S. has to do alone. It's two to tango in this game.
That said, I will tell you one businessman who benefited from yesterday's announcement.
Thomas Hertzfeld, chairman of the Hertzfeld Caribbean Basin Fund.
20 years ago, Hertzfeld picked a bunch of stocks that he thought would do well one day down the road when relations with Cuba improved. His fund jumped in value by 50%. And it's a pretty good proxy for what businesses we can expect to do well in an open Cuba.
Copa Airlines, they currently have service to Cuba. The cruise lines are obvious infrastructure companies of shipping and food.
And U.S. agriculture has been chomping at the bit to sell to Cuba. Devery Bufner-Vorwerk is with Cargill and chairs the U.S. Agriculture Coalition on Cuba.
Cuba used to be the U.S. rice exporter's number one export market. They're not selling rice there today. So it's a modest market, but it's an important market.
Even though Cuba is small and, well, poor, Hoffbauer at the Peterson Institute estimates trade between the U.S. and Cuba could add up to $12 billion. That's about what the U.S. does with the Dominican Republic. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
This is oil country. The wealth is under the ground, not on top of it.
A clip from the 1949 movie Tulsa about the Oklahoma oil boom. All right. Chapter 3, The Future, the idea that oil and gas and the prices thereof are built into just about everything that happens in this economy, including your lives.
To actually see it drop low enough to where I can fill my tank up for about $40 instead of $55, yeah, it makes a difference. That's $15 I can allocate somewhere else.
I tend to accelerate a little more and get the lower end than I would have been doing if it was $4. I'd drive much more carefully.
I'm a financial advisor, and I'd rather they were higher because my investments and my clients' investments are in gas and oil.
How much do you love that? The lady changes the way she drives. Marketplace's Scott Tong is here to close things out for us. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Kai.
So let me turn now toward the future with you in this program and where we go in this oil economy. And the jumping off point is where we are now, which is a time of great volatility, shall we say, in the energy markets. What happens now with all this volatility?
Maybe we get a whole lot more of it. I know that's what you really want to hear, mm-hmm. but that's the conversation now. If you look back for a second, ever since the 70s, there's been this kind of oil price shock absorber in the world, and that was OPEC. It wasn't perfect, but when prices went up, they turned up the spigot, added more oil, and prices moderated a little bit. When they went down, they took some oil off the market, and prices came back up a little bit. And now those days may be over. A lot of OPEC observers say the cartel may not have the drilling ability or the financial ability to do that anymore. So guess what? We could be in for an extended period of wild rides. Mm. And how wild has it been? Let me just play you a little bit of sound from a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Here are two American oil workers, one from Midland, Texas, one from Eastern Ohio, talking about how there was no end in sight for this boom.
Roughnecks, we spend money. We have toys. I don't know a roughneck out there that has a bank account. We have toys.
There's really no end in sight right now because we're going to need oil for the foreseeable future. So it's a steady gold rush, I guess you could say.
Steady gold rush. All that was just 2 years ago. So, and now, of course, it sure feels like bust. I mean, that could be what we're in for a while, Kai.
Yeah, but Scott, I mean, those roughnecks and Mayor DeLeon from Carrizo Springs, you heard him, you mm-hmm. know, he's like, this oil ain't never running out. What are we in store for, potentially?
Well, if there's too much oil in the world, then we could have low prices for a while, and that could be the problem. I mean, there's a lag in the effect in the oil patch, but each day already brings another announcement of a company cutting back on their drilling because prices are too low. The smaller guys borrow a lot of money, and now they have junk bond ratings, and so they could be in trouble. The banks are pulling back on their assumptions of where this is all going to go. If prices stay where they are, that is south of 60 for a while, Goldman Sachs estimates producers could lose $1 trillion, so the pain could be big.
All right, well, let me play the Federal Reserve card for you here for a minute. Janet Yellen, the chair of the Fed, said yesterday in her press conference that she thinks low oil prices, you know, where they are now or even lower, are a net good for the global economy. So that's the macroeconomic view, right? What happens down in the actual, you know, producer economy and the consumer economy?
Well, what Yellen said reflects what a lot of people think, that in the short term, it is an absolute economic stimulus for all of us who leave the gas station with more money in our pockets suddenly, right? And cheap energy also helps keep inflation down, and the Fed's been thinking about that. But longer term, there are a lot of questions, and it really depends when we think about you and me. It depends who you are. If you're an investor, the financial market is taking a big hit, particularly stocks that are exposed to energy and the bond market, too. A lot of what's been happening in America has been because we have cheap natural gas. We have the cheapest electricity in the world. Well, natural gas in much of the world goes down when oil goes down. So if we don't have this big industrial advantage anymore, perhaps that erodes American competitiveness. So if you work there, that's a question. Obviously, if you work in the oil patch and if you work in the renewable space. Right now, wind and solar have become astonishingly competitive. But guess what? Fossil fuels have gone down. Suddenly, their competition has gotten cheaper. And those stocks have gotten pounded, too. So there are different parts of the economy, midterm, longer term, that could also feel the pain here.
You know, it's funny. We have been talking in this country for so long about wanting to get rid of this dependence on foreign oil. And in the last 5 or 8 years, thanks to fracking in North Dakota and what's going on down in the Eagle Ford Shale, it is now happening, and everybody is like, too much oil, it's a bad thing.
It brings good and bad things, and I tell you that if we take the long-term question of climate change for all of us, I mean, for the longest time we were talking about, okay, to get us off fossil fuels, we need this carbon tax. Well, with cheap oil, it's basically a carbon subsidy. So long-term, that may be one of the large questions hanging over everything.
Scott Tong from the Sustainability Desk on what is yet to come in this crude economy. Scott, thanks very much.
All right. You're welcome.
I'm going to have more money than you ever thought you could have. You and all the rest, you stinking sons of Benedicts.
That was James Dean, by the way. Giant, 1956. Maybe the best oil movie ever. I don't know. We could argue about that.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
All right, this final note on the way out today, some of the things made out of oil or derivatives therefrom, compiled full disclosure by the oil and gas firm Rankin Energy, deodorant, yarn, floor wax, and crayons. So now you know. The Dow and the markets went crazy today. We will have more on that tomorrow on our weekly wrap. In the meanwhile, we got to go. You can hear the music. Ben Adair, John Buckley, Patty Hirsch, Cindy Johnston, George Judson, Dave Shawn, Betsy Streisand are the editing staff. Our managing editor is Mark Miller. I'm Kai Rizdahl, and this is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.